Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on Monday's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. Of course, I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I brought to you an amazing show today. Today's show is going to be very interesting, as always, because we have such a diverse group. It's so interesting to me when the group has one person from this industry, one person from that industry, and I never know what's going to happen, but I know it's going to be fun. So I'm going to ask you to do what I ask you to do every day, every week on the Roundtable Talk Show. And that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. Find a friend. Heck, find 10 friends. Find somebody who needs to hear this information, because our guests are here this morning to share their stories, their journeys, their whys, their products, their services with you, and you can share it with your friends, because as we know, friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're being an evangelist, I'm going to be a good host, and I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest. And our first guest today is Miss Rosemarie Williams. Rosemarie is an author and professional speaker. She is a leading influence on the power of nonverbal communication and how it affects every aspect of our lives, relationships, social interactions, and careers. She is a renowned dog trainer and dog behavior consultant. Good morning, Rosemarie. How are you?
Good morning. I am great. And how are you?
I'm excited. It's Monday. I've been sleeping. I've been resting. Excited coming up with new ideas and questions for the show.
So am I. I'm excited to be here as well and to get to chat with everyone around this table. Absolutely. So I am a dog trainer, but I'm also a body language expert. I'm writing a book, actually. It's called Lead the Human Pack, Think Like a Dog Trainer. You know, when we train dogs, we always think about that aspect, but it's very quickly learned that the dog understands everything that's going on. The human needs to be taught how to manage the dog. So in reality, you know what I'm really doing? I'm teaching people how to lead with body language, how to speak non-verbally, because dogs are truly, they're non-verbal. They don't speak to us. They rely on senses, they rely on smell, and mostly they rely on your body language. So if we're not aware of our body language, we can't lead with certainty. So that's what I like to do. I like to teach people to be aware of their body language, pay attention to what's going on, and listen to with your eyes.
Yes. And what I like to do is ask questions. So what occurs to me is, how did you start on this journey? Were you out walking, a dog started whispering to you, and you was like, hey, this is what I want to do with my life?
Well, sort of like that. But, you know, I grew up in a household where we lived on a farm. So we always had dogs. They were working breeds, herding cows, taking care of the chicken coops. So my mother always had dogs in a household. But I don't think she realized that she was a dog whisperer, because she managed those dogs without any verbal cues. She'd just give them a hand signal and they'd be gone. But my passion for dogs began there, but then it evolved as my career evolved, because I've been in the law enforcement security field all my life. And then I reignited my passion with dogs, and I started training professionally. I was overseas working with dogs and detection dogs. And the one thing that keeps bringing me back to one thing, train the handler. Because the dogs, again, they know what to do. So if you train the handler and bring them aware of how their body language is speaking to the dog, and they become managed together, they become a team. And once they become a team, they're unstoppable. So that's what ignited that passion, that day that I realized, I've got to work with that handler. The dog knows what to do.
Wow, that is powerful. But not to judge you, Rosemarie, but when I look, I would never think law enforcement. You just seem like a nice, I would think librarian or something. Like, you just seem like this nice little lady. I would never think law enforcement.
I do get that a lot, but once I get in front of handlers and their dogs, and you know, people hire me all the time to fix bad behaviors, and I go to their house and I take the dog, and within seconds the dog is minding me and doing things, and they're going, that dog doesn't do that for me, because you never asked, because you didn't speak to the dog properly, so you didn't ask. So once you teach them how how they're imprinted negative behaviors to the dog and how they can change that by the way they perceive all the information. I helped a lot of families with their dogs.
Wow, very interesting. Now, Rosemary, I am going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest,
Okay.
Miss Carrie Fazell. Carrie is a listener, writer, thinker, re-examiner, and introvert. She is a co-CEO and co-founder of Concurrent Productions. In this role, she enjoys interviewing business owners to draw out their authentic selves on camera. She is host of the podcast, I Reinvented My Life in Business. I have to see if I can get on that show. Good morning, Carrie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. Thank you so much for having me.
Are you going to be introverted on the show?
Well, I'm going to try not to be, but it might help me if you ask me some questions.
I don't know if you want that because sometimes my mind just goes in different places. You tell me you're an introvert, it's like, ooh, this might be fun. So, how do you step out of your introvert shell and become a podcast host?
Yeah. So I love having conversations, and I love how you set this up as a conversation because I do feel like we're here to talk to each other and learn from each other. So I don't feel that pressure. So yeah, when I'm a podcast host, it takes the pressure off of me to ask other people questions. And I love being curious and just kind of pulling on a thread of how did you get from here to there? Yeah, so that's what I love to do with the podcast and then also with our videos. I work on branding videos that really are about a company's soul. If you don't have a soul, I probably can't work with you. But yeah, really with companies who have a heart and who do what they do with passion and purpose. And I love talking to entrepreneurs who can share about that and really have meaningful leadership in the way that they lead their companies.
So I'm curious, what is a re-examiner?
I would define that as like I'm someone who has goes really fully into something and then kind of steps back and is like, huh, maybe that's not actually what I want to do, or maybe that's not really who I am now. Yeah, so I kind of immerse myself in experiences and step back and think, is that who I am now? So yeah, a kind of reevaluation of what I want to be doing or who I am.
I like that. When I heard it, because that's why I wanted to ask you that question. When I thought of a re-examiner, I thought of someone who is an independent researcher, you know, because so often we accept things as faith at face value. We accept things as fact, and it might not be a fact. It might be an opinion. So a re-examiner not only examines the information that was brought over, they re-examine it to make sure it's accurate. That's what I thought of.
I love that definition. Yeah,
You can have that, by
thank you. And
the
I think what I really want to get to about myself is figuring out like what is at the core of that, you know, like what's the common thread or common theme? I was a grant writer for a while. I wanted to save the world. I wrote business plans, and now I work in video. And I think really the common thread of that is storytelling. So by re-examining, is this what I want to do? I also ask myself, like, what is it about me that drew me to this? Even if it's something that isn't really satisfying me anymore, is there something that kind of is at the core? So really digging into what do I really like about the world? And that's being curious about things and yeah, re-examining.
I know in life we tend to go through cycles or periods or ups and downs and that kind of thing. I noticed you said you wanted, past tense, you wanted to save the world. Like now, do you think the world is okay the way it is?
Oh, I love that question. No, I don't think the world is okay as it is, but I also do. I think that I spent a long time feeling like it was my responsibility to save other people and realize that I can't, and really just to focus on myself, my little corner, and being as okay and peaceful as I can, and realizing that that is actually the only way I can save the world is to save myself. And I don't even really know what that means, but yeah, I think just to be at peace.
We're gonna figure that out today. We're gonna figure out
Peace.
today
That's what I
exactly what
came here
that
for.
means. Yes, that's what I do. But I love that you open with the word listener. I'm a listener, you know, and when I've hosted my radio show since I launched Ash Sharifa Radio in 2009. I've hosted like about five or six different versions of the show since then. And people have told me, Sharifa, you're an excellent host. You're an excellent host. And I always say, well, you know, I'm more of a really good listener, you know, because I love to allow people a platform and an avenue to be able to share their stories. Why did you lead with being a listener?
Oh, yeah, I think it is something that defines me. It's who I want to be. And I think it is kind of rare, and I see that in you for sure. And it's also something people have told me, that I'm a good listener. So kind of recognizing that may be something that isn't something everyone does, but everyone can also, that it's not really a special thing. It's something that anyone can be a good listener. You just choose to be.
Absolutely. And I think that works hand in hand with saving the world. You know, you can't save the world unless you listen and you understand what the world's problems are. So, Carrie, I am going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Miss Patricia Moffitt. Patricia is Pat Ohlendorf Moffitt, an award-winning magazine journalist in Canada for many years, writing for Canadian publications such as Chatelaine, Maclean's, Canadian Business, The Globe and Mail, Toronto Magazine, among others, and Discover Magazine in the U.S. since 2003. Since 2003, she has collaborated with her husband, physicist John Moffitt, in writing popular physics books. Good morning, Patricia. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I'm fine. Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
I am excellent. I'm excited. It's Monday. It's a new show. Already met a couple of guests so far. What do you think of the show so far?
Oh, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying listening to everyone because I like to listen too. Having been a journalist, I spent most of my time listening, not talking about myself. So this is different for me.
Yes, that's what we do in media. We listen and we learn about other people's stories. Like Carrie was saying, but Patricia, tell us, who are you? What do you do?
Okay. As you said, I've been a magazine journalist for my career. And then when I stopped that, I worked with my husband on books, his books, popular physics books. And finally, it's going to be backwards, isn't it?
No, it's fine. She turned her head away. It's beautiful.
It's backwards to me. She turned her head away. An adoption memoir is a book that I have been working on since 1977, 78. It's been sitting on my shelf as I went about my journalism and having a family, raising my kids, getting divorced, married again, all of that. And I've come back to this book several times over the years. And as my story developed and as my relationships with my families changed, I would add more to the book and just enrich it as I went along. I've always been a journal keeper. So people say to me, well, how do you get all that dialogue? How do you remember all the dialogue? Because the book reads more like a novel than anything else. And the reason is I write everything down. When I first contacted my birth mother, we talked on the phone, and as soon as we got off the phone, tears streaming down my face, I wrote everything down in my journal. So that's part, that pretty straightforward, that part.
That's very exciting. I want to go back to something that you said, mm-hmm. Patricia. I want to talk about your birth mother a little bit, but I want to go back to where you said it took years, basically, for you to get this book out. How did you know that it was now time? Like, this is the time to release this book you've been working on.
I think it came about by happenstance, because I have a friend who's a novelist, and he knew about this book that I had been sitting on my shelf for almost 40 years. And he had recently gotten a new publisher, Toronto, Chicago company, Crow's Nest, straddles the border, which is great for me because I grew up and was adopted all in California, but lived in Toronto. I had two New York agents earlier on in the process, and one of them died, and I was so shocked I stopped working on the book. The other one shopped it around and couldn't sell it. She didn't feel comfortable with the fact that it was just a memoir and not a service book to help other people who were searching for birth parents. So again, I kind of let it go. But this time, the publisher was very interested. And I have a theory why that is. I think back the other times I tried to get it published in around 1980 and then in the late 90s, the DNA companies were nowhere then. But, you know, there's been a lot of interest in finding families with Ancestry.com and 23andMe and other companies like that, where, whoa, you can be at the keyboard and suddenly find a first cousin, or suddenly find that the guy that you thought was your father all your life is not your father. And so I think there have been a lot of connections being made through this new technology that have brought up the same kind of questions that were within me when I went looking for my mother and birth family. That is, what will the reception be? Will she reject me again? Or what kind of a relationship will we have? Or will we not want to see each other again? I took the book all the way up through my birth parent and my adoptive parent's death. So a lot of people have written memoirs about finding family, but they tend to stop right after the reunion, whether it's happy or not. But I took this all the way through my complete relationships with them. So I've been able to look back and say, what did this all mean? Would I have done that again? It was very traumatic for my adoptive mother, by the way. She's a big part of the book because we were very close.
Wow. I definitely want to talk about that, Patricia. We're going to talk about that a little bit more, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Lise LeBlanc. Lise has the experience and insight to offer guidance for coping with PTSD. As a registered psychotherapist for over 20 years, Lise has learned that the first step in recovering from any illness is facing it. She applies her deep insights and effective strategies to each book she writes for the Mental Health Recovery series. Through relatable and real life stories, useful exercise, and reflective questions, her books will answer many of your questions while guiding you to achieve an optimal state of wellness. Good morning, Lise. How are you?
I'm totally pumped to be here. And as I'm listening to the other guests, I'm just fascinated. My brain's like popcorn. I'm like, oh, I want to talk about what you brought up around physiology and energy, and just thinking about, I'm I call myself an extroverted introvert. I can talk, I can be the life of the party, but then I can be very, very introverted and in my own space and my own company. And just listening to your story around book publishing, and it took me 10 years to publish or write my first book, kind of just writing it off the side of my desk and doing it, you know, here and there when I could, and working full time and, you know, little kids at the time, and just so much stuff was going on in my life. And, you know, 17 years ago, I just kind of went on to my own healing journey because I was, you know, looked good on the outside, but falling apart on the inside. So in the books that I write, which now I have several, so I have the Grief and Loss Guide here, PTSD Guide, as well as a Caregiving Guide. And my newest book, which I actually don't even have a copy of, the one that I wrote first, is called The De-Stress Guide. And so what I do as a psychotherapist, I have a lot of online courses. I do a lot of conflict resolution, but what I really do is I help people go right down into the basement, right down to the core of their issues, whether that be trauma, but whatever is jamming up your nervous system in fight or flight mode, in stress and survival mode, I go down into the root of that and uproot it, so that you can release the nervous system.
Yes. Now, I want to talk about the last year, almost the last year. We've been in this COVID situation and people have been stressed out. very stressed out, very depressed, very anxious. But what I have seen is that more people have acknowledged PTSD in the last year than I think ever in life as I've seen it. And that's because we're noticing that we're in a collective grieving process and finding other ways to cope with it. What have you seen, Lise?
So, you know, 100%, I think the whole part of the grieving process, you know, we started out and we were all, you know, kind of like angry and in denial. And, you know, my business was shut down by the government, not an essential service in the beginning. You know, so we all had to kind of go like, what the hell, this isn't really happening. And, you know, there was some anger, and then we kind of went into just these different stages, you know, a bit of helplessness, drinking more wine, and kind of like, what do we do now, you know? And I think a lot of people just kind of got very stressed out around the worries. What does this mean? What's it going to look like later? How am I going to survive this? And it also took away a lot of the distractions. You know, we numb ourselves out. We distract ourselves a lot. And then boom, you take that stuff away and people are there in their families, in their marriages, with their kids, you know, in their life with not a lot of distraction. And it's kind of a moment to pause and reflect about, you know, what's really going on in my life, first of all, and is it really working for me? And we're collectively kind of going through that, and people who've kind of not been really being, I'll say, truthful with themselves, or have kind of built a wall between themselves and whatever, you know, painful emotions, trauma, whatever that's going on inside of them. You spend your life kind of looking good on the outside, accomplishing things, getting more, you know, stuff. And now we're all shut down and we're just kind of looking at our own reality. So, you know, like everyone else, it caused me to pause and reflect as well. And where was I really spending my time and energy, and kind of getting to that point of acceptance? Some are there, some are not. And being able to collectively start, I guess, building a new consciousness, or looking inside and really kind of figuring out who am I at the core, and reinventing ourselves, using it as an opportunity for new possibility, because we really can't deny that things weren't amazing before COVID. Like, we can all sit here and point our finger at COVID. COVID's kind of made us look at some of the things that were already there.
Powerful. Lee, I'm going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And our next guest is Miss Phoenix Normally. Phoenix is a psychic advisor on mysticsense.com and has been providing professional spiritual readings to the public since 2018. She's also a certified meditation guide and Reiki master teacher. Good morning, Phoenix. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm excited. I'm excited to have you on the show. I'm excited to hear all about you.
Oh, thank you. I'm a little nervous myself, so.
Don't be nervous, I don't bite.
Yeah, so I do psychic readings with mysticsense.com, and I actually am now the brand ambassador with the company, which is exciting.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I started doing professional readings in 2018. And I actually picked it up all the way in high school when I was a freshman. I had some classmates that were interested in tarot and spirituality, and I had never been exposed to it before then. So I thought, wow, this is super interesting. Teach me what you know about it. So that was kind of what we did during like lunch hour, you know, and on the bus and stuff. We talked about this stuff, and I was really fascinated with it. So I started reading some books, studying it, and I discovered that it is a huge passion of mine. So I kind of went with it. And now it has become my career full time, which is super exciting. I kind of built my dreams up since that time. So I've been doing readings for about 9 years, over 9 years. But I've been professionally doing them since 2018, when I took the plunge and I left my day job and I decided I'm going to go all in. And so I went out and I started marketing myself and I opened a business. It was brand new for me. And so far it has been super successful. So I'm happy to be here with you.
I'm happy that it's super successful. I see you right there playing with your cards. So I have to ask, what does my future hold?
So that is why I have my cards here today. Let's see what the card has to say. So I have Breathe. So this card for you is saying that it is time to take a deep breath and just kind of sit with where you're at and not focus so much on the past and the present. It's more about simply being, because that gives you a new perspective on your situation in life. It gives you a new perspective on where you're at, which will let you make decisions from a clearer place. So that is what I have for you today.
I love it. I love it. That was kind of cool. I like that. Breathe. I had to remember to breathe. There's a lot going on. I have a lot. So I'll keep that in mind. So I want to go over to, who was I going back to? Lise, you talked about being an extroverted introvert. And that's one of the things that I often say. I tell people I'm an introverted extrovert. And that's because I'm like Carrie. I'm a very introverted person. I'm a very shy person. But then when I go to do the shows, it's like, I have to put it on. I have to bring up this energy. Is that kind of your experience, Lise?
Yeah, exactly. I need a lot of alone time. That's how I recharge. I'm alone. I love my own company. And, you know, when I'm with people, it's more, you know, it takes up more of my mental, emotional energy. And so I really manage that well. I loved what Patricia was talking about around, you know, we do sense each other's energy. We do, you know, have to know how our own energy works and be really mindful of that, because we can deplete ourselves really easily or allow our energy to just kind of flow out and get, you know, stolen or taken by other people.
Yes, because I really truly believe, and I want to go back to Phoenix and her tarot reading, is that I truly believe that we are all energy. You know, science has proven that we are all energy. And so with a lot of people, especially the extroverted introverts or the introverted extroverts, is that we lift other people's spirit, whether through our entertainment, our abilities, but in lifting, that energy is transferred. So we're taking it on and then we have to release it in some way. Carrie, you were going to say something.
Oh, I don't know. I think I was just nodding.
Okay, no, because you came off mute. And so I'm like, Carrie has a point. That's my cue when people want to say something.
No, but I think this is so interesting. And maybe, I mean, I relate to a lot of that, like being kind of really on when I'm with people. I took a Myers-Briggs test and I think it was like INTJ or INFJ or in the middle. And something it said in the description was like, my personality is so introverted that I like portray that I'm not that. And that, I mean, Lise, you probably know a lot more about this, but I thought that was so interesting. And just that, yeah, being like, I want to keep myself to myself in a way, but that I, yeah, kind of betray that to others.
Powerful. Phoenix, energy. What are your thoughts on it?
So I definitely agree with you that everyone is energy. I think it's the core of everything. I took a class in chemistry in college, and one of the things that I was super excited about was the cellular structure of atoms. And they have the electrons, right? Which are attracted to the protons. And that electrical attraction is a form of energy. And the fact that it's even in a cellular structure in such a fundamental way, to me, that is super powerful, because that is what we're made of, right? Every cell in our body and the molecules are all made up of that structure of electrons and protons and that energy between them. And I just think it makes a lot of sense to me, especially from a Reiki perspective, that dealing with the energy that you're putting off or the energy of other people and energy healing and all of the other things that go with that, it makes sense from the perspective of the chemistry, that if you're dealing with the fundamentals, it builds up into the, from the microcosm to the macrocosm.
So for our audience who is not aware or who doesn't know what Reiki is, would you explain it, Phoenix?
Absolutely. So Reiki is a alternative energy healing method. And so it basically deals with channeling universal energy and putting it, giving it to other people. So the word Reiki is Japanese, and it started in the 1920s in Japan by Dr. Yusui Maikao Yusui, and it spread from there, right? And so now we have it worldwide. And Reiki means Rei and Ki, which is universal energy, universal life force in the Japanese language. And the idea is that energy is out there in the universe and it's waiting to be tapped in. And through the Reiki attunements and the Reiki, the process of giving a treatment with Reiki, you can channel that energy and give it to where it's needed. And that's the whole premise behind it. So it kind of works off of what I was just talking about with the energy connections between people and between cells and between everything. I think Reiki is a good, it really makes sense to me from a big perspective that everything is interconnected.
Mm-hmm. I believe Rosemary feels the same way. We are connected. That's how we communicate with our pets.
Exactly. I agree completely with Phoenix, and energy is very important. We feed off of it. We redirect people, we direct animals with the energy. What if you've got somebody that has negative energy, we use our positive energy to bring them forward to do their best. So I agree.
I've been told, and I don't know if it's an old wives' tale or not, but that pets, or especially like dogs, can sense a person's energy. Like they're like kids and babies. Like pets can say, "Oh, that all of a sudden they don't want to go near that person," or maybe they start barking because they felt that person's energy. Has that ever been your experience?
Absolutely, yeah. So, and then that's another thing you have to bring to people's attention. Everything goes down leash per se, right? Because they could feel you. They feel your sadness. They feel your happiness. They feel your emotions. They smell you. They smell the endorphins that are coming off you. They could smell when you're lying to them. And so it's important that you are mindful of your energy, as Phoenix would put it, and your body language, and how you are signaling people to perceive you, including your dogs.
What are some signals or some signs that your dog knows that you're lying?
Well, let's say you say, "Sit, Bruce, sit." And the dog knows that you're lying. And it's sort of like going, they can feel the energy of you. And maybe I've got 5 warnings before you're actually gonna come over here and say, "Sit." So they know you're not going to follow through, that type of thing. And the trust is a big deal as well. Because if you're angry and you're shouting and you're anxious yourself, the dog smells that as fear and that you are not leading the pack. So 9 out of 10 times that dog's going to take the lead and lead the pack for you.
Very interesting. It makes perfect sense. So we have energy, humans, animals. I want to talk to Patricia. Your journey is about your adoption process, finding your birth mother. Would you say you're an introvert, extrovert? How was it for you?
I think most writers are mostly introvertish, don't you?
I do. But when you were going through this process, how did it make you feel? What was this journey like for you?
I was actually, when Phoenix was talking about Reiki and energy, I was just thinking so much about my birth family, because in my adopted family where I grew up, it was all very straight and narrow, you know, Presbyterian upbringing. And I went to college, I majored in English, I went in the Peace Corps, I taught, you know, boom, boom, boom. Then when I found my mother, one of the first things she asked me on the phone before we even met was, "Do you believe in reincarnation?" And I said, "What are you getting at?" You know, like I hadn't been exposed to any of this. And then through getting to know her and my grandfather, who was one of the original LSD patients experimented on in the States under Timothy O'Leary, he was such a seeker. He just had to expand his consciousness in ways that people shouldn't. But anyway, my mother was very into tarot readings and energy fields. She came to visit accompanied by her spirit guides, who congregated with my and my children's spirit guides on the ceiling. And I mean, And to me, this aspect of her was like totally crazy a lot of the time because of where I was coming from. But I learned so much from her about allowing yourself to be open to these ideas. And I was able to touch the human energy field. I don't know if you've ever done therapeutic touch, Phoenix. It's you're basically feeling the human energy field. And you can, some people are so sensitive that they can actually diagnose problems. Okay, so I'm not saying that I went completely over to that side, but getting to know my mother and my birth family and their very different beliefs certainly shook me up inside and opened me up to a lot of new things.
Very interesting, Patricia. I'd love for Phoenix to respond.
Okay, so I do not have any experience with therapeutic touch, but I am curious about it because I've heard about it. But it's definitely great to hear your experience. I think having an open mind is really kind of the doorway to discovering yourself, mm-hmm. in my opinion. And I think that it doesn't matter what context that's in. I think for people to really discover where their passion is, they have to be open to it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I was, I love this conversation. I was cracked open. So at 19, you know, I'd had a lot of childhood trauma, a lot of stuff going on in my teenage years, anxious, depressed. I had an eating disorder and I got to a point, I was in an abusive relationship and I was suicidal and I was laying on my bed and I had this moment, this glimpse of separation from myself, an out of body experience. And in that moment of just kind of realizing that all these thoughts and all this kind of this character that I'd been kind of living into, all the conditioning that I'd had through my experiences as a child. And it just, you know, there was like a moment of awakening. It was just a glimpse, a moment, you know, it kind of just shut right back down. But in that moment, it was this clarity of, you know, are we really who we think we are? And then I started kind of thinking, this isn't who I want to be. And I built a wall between my own energy, my own emotions, my own trauma. So my nervous system stayed stuck. And then I went on this huge search for looking for happiness in external circumstances and accomplishments, get all the degrees and get the nice house and the kids and the family and the job and the blah, blah, blah. And then by the time I was 30, the energy that I was, you know, that was, I guess that I was repressing and blocking all of that stuff, it just started kind of pushing up on me again. And I went again, had a burnout. And from that burnout, I just went on this huge kind of seeking journey. And I realized that, you know, the medication I was on and, you know, the kind of therapies I was getting in the office, it wasn't working for me. And I went to Peru and I did ayahuasca and I tried all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, like crazy out there. I hiked the Grand Canyon. I went looking for myself, not knowing I was already here and that I was the one blocking my own energy. And so when that started to kind of start flowing, well, I had a lot of stuff to face in here and I didn't want to deal with my childhood crap. I didn't, but I got to a point of suffering where I realized that what I'm afraid of is inside of me. And unless I start pulling that stuff out, I'm going to keep blocking myself. So I'm just loving this conversation and how it's kind of rolling out into this energy stuff is very cool.
Yes, absolutely. Carrie, what are your thoughts?
Oh, wow. This is so interesting. And I've had, I really like what everyone is saying. And just the idea that Phoenix brought up of like, you have to be open to what you want. And I think being open to being surprised that, and also really understanding that there are options that are available or that are, you know, beyond what you can imagine if you start to be curious about that and open some doors that you didn't even know existed. I think that's really interesting. I've had some experiences in Amsterdam or the Netherlands where mushrooms are legal. I had some experiences there that are really mind expanding and just being curious about what is that? what is that? I don't understand what's happening, but what is that?
Very interesting. I want to go back over to Patricia because people always talk about when they're adopted, how they may, and they meet their birth family, they find that they recognize certain things or certain aspects within the family that they see in themselves. And they never knew, oh, well, I got that from my birth mom. I got that from my birth dad. And you never knew. Did you have that experience, Patricia?
First of all, I haven't found my birth father. So
okay.
That whole part of the family is out of it. But well, yes. Well, let me backtrack. Being adopted, you know, at the time I was adopted, it was called the baby scoop era from 1945 until Roe v. Wade in 73. And social workers tried to match infants with their prospective adopted parents. And the social workers did a pretty good job with me because my mom and I were always told how much we looked alike, which made us laugh because we weren't related at all.
And you knew that your entire life, Patricia, that you were adopted?
Yeah. At that time, the advice was to tell the kid the truth as early as possible, not to make a big deal about it. And that's still true today. But it was an amazing experience for me, not only meeting my mother, but my two half sisters in the same day. And one of them we look quite similar, and it was like looking in a mirror. I'd never had that experience before. Our eyes are the same, you know. And then the family had a picnic for me. This is on Whidbey Island in Washington State. And I had been in California at the time this happened. So we all went to my grandfather's house. There were 15 or 20 people there. And I was related to almost everybody in the room. That was the most amazing feeling for me, because the only people until then that I had been with that I was related by blood to were my two children, who were 3 and 1 at that time. And the family is musical. My adopted family was not particularly musical, although my adopted brother and I both went into music in one way or another. But my great grandfather had been a maker of violins in Pasadena, and lots of people in the family were very musical, and so that made me feel at home because I hadn't experienced that before.
It's interesting what runs in our genes. If you haven't seen it, any of you, I just watched this movie over the weekend on Netflix called The Healer. And if you haven't seen it, I thought this movie was amazing, but it's about this young man. I think he's roughly 30 years old, and he doesn't know that he's a healer, that he has the ability to heal. He has absolutely no idea. He goes back home to where his family originated, and his whole family line, it was something that he found out about, that it was in his genetics. And when it was in his family line that he had the ability to heal. So it was called The Healer on Netflix if you want to check it out. But Phoenix, what are your thoughts? Are these things that, you know, come down generation to generation?
I have mixed feelings on it. I think there's some truth to it because my great grandmother was a professional tea leaf reader. Mm-hmm. And my mother was involved with spirituality when she was around my age. She's no longer interested in it, but she used to do it. So I think it's interesting that, you know, even in my genetic family, we have people that have been doing, you know, divination and things for generations. And I think there's some truth to that. But at the same time, I want to say, you know, everybody has the ability, and, you know, we can access it through like meditation and working on ourselves. But, you know, I'm kind of torn, honestly. I don't really know.
You got to watch The Healer, Phoenix. Write to me, email me, let me know what you thought, because I just thought this movie was just so interesting. And you watch a lot of movies where people have whatever gifts and they never know, you know, they have these gifts, and all of a sudden life happens, they go through some divorce or some challenge, and all of a sudden all these abilities open up. So I just thought it was very interesting. So you've been doing this professionally for 2 years. What have you seen over the last year? Have people needed more readings, less readings? Are people freaking out like, oh my God, what do I do?
So in general, when there's chaos in the world, psychics get a lot more customers because no one knows what's going on. And they're like, we need to know what's happening. But I feel like a lot of people don't really expect what they're going to get. Like, so the readings are more about possibilities, like based on your life today, this is what is possible. This is where you're headed. There's no absolutes in this. And some people are like, what is going to happen? I need to know, you know, this question. And we can tell you what might happen, but we can't guarantee anything's going to happen. Because if you walk out of the session today and make a radically different choice because someone told you this thing, that's going to change what the card said because you were changed from that information. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. And I think a lot of people explain it in a lot of different ways. The definition that I have learned and that I've kind of accepted and become comfortable with is that I look at readings like a GPS, right? We all are so familiar with our GPS, and our GPS just simply tells us how to get to where we want to go. So I could tell people to get on a certain freeway. Here in California, it's the 405. And if you get on the 405 in 30 minutes, you should reach Los Angeles. But that's all based on free will. That's based on the fact that you stay on the freeway. That's based on the fact that there are no accidents along the way, you know, but we all have freedom of choice. So it's a very interesting topic for me. Do we have any other tarot readers? Reiki masters? No.
I have my mother's tarot deck.
Oh, you do?
But I've never used it the way it's meant to be used.
What do you use it for then?
Just a keepsake from her.
Okay. I thought you was like trying to win the lottery or something.
No.
You never tried to do a reading or anything, even for yourself?
Well, she did readings for me. And we talked a lot about it, but I don't know. I've just not gotten into that. But I'm into other things that she taught me, like meditation.
Yeah. So I think it was Liz who teaches guided meditation. I have to read my notes. Phoenix.
I do them. I don't teach them.
Okay. Okay, so now basically what you guys are telling me is that I have to read my notes because someone somewhere was teaching something. Who does meditation?
I do.
When did you get started with meditation, Gary?
That's a good question. I mean, I guess I would consider like prayer meditation. So in middle school, but thinking of it as meditation, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay, interesting. So what has been my experience is that prayer is talking to God, talking to source, talking to the universe, talking, you know, whoever you call that, whereas meditation is listening, is receiving, is getting those messages. And I try to meditate every day. If not, I'll be bouncing off the wall. I'll just tell you that right now. I'll be worse than I am now. Rosemary, do you do any meditation?
I do, actually. And I try to make sure I do it at least once a day because it resets, it refocuses, resets your mind and your spirit. And it's a way to release from the stress of the world and get you centered again.
Absolutely. And Liz, does it help with PTSD? Does it help with the depression, the stress, the anxiety?
I think it helps with everything. And I think, you know, a lot of people meditate, but don't really know how to meditate. So although, you know, I do teach my clients how to meditate, you know, I really let people know it's like, pull that energy all the way up from your root chakra, all the way up to the top, hold it there, create that electromagnetic charge, get that awareness outside of all that thinking. So separating from your thoughts. And if your thinking mind's going to start going off and just, you know, blah, 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 kind of disconnect from all these thoughts that we think are real and true, all these mental movies we're playing out over and over repetitively all day long, and just create that separation, that distance between all the conscious thinking mind, and just kind of rise yourself out of that. And it's almost like you're creating this antenna, this frequency to really listen and to create an energy state, a change in your own electromagnetic biochemical state inside of you. And that's when meditation really benefits. You know, if you just sit quietly in your room and just stay stuck in your blah, 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 it's really, you know, I guess you could still call it meditation, but you're not really going to experience the deep transformational effects that meditation can provide. I'm a very disciplined meditator nowadays. I meditate, you know, 2-3 times a day. I do Wim Hof breathing or you know, some really deep breathing and really go inside. So I've just really become disciplined about my own energy state and mental emotional state.
So for people who say, I find meditation difficult, or like you said, my mind wanders, these things, what are some suggestions or tips that you can provide?
So I think we're all, you know, we all start out having a hard time because we're all addicted to our own thoughts. We just kind of follow the, you know, ride the wave of all that thinking, you know, true or not, it doesn't even matter. We just believe it all. You know, you can be driving somewhere, you don't even know where you are. You're just so lost in your thoughts. And it's to really start bringing that back. So I find with the deep breathing and holding your breath and creating that change in your own energy, that really helps you kind of get that distance. And whatever mantra or motto you want to use, when you start thinking, it's blah, blah, blah. What are you talking about? I don't know. That's not true. Whatever helps you kind of separate from just, that'll be there later. You know, your thought addiction or that stream of thinking will always be available to you and you can jump right in. A lot of those thoughts aren't even your own. It's just our old conditioning that we've been fed our whole lives from the time we were little. And, you know, rising above that, I think for everyone, it's difficult. So if I had a tip to give is get into the deep breathing first, do 10 minutes of deep breathing, holding, pulling your energy all the way up from your perineum, all the way up into the, you know, the top of your head, hold it there, kind of allow yourself to expand your thinking to the space that's around you versus all the thinking. And then just have some kind of mantra that stops, like that snaps you out of your thought addictions.
I love it. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Patricia.
Thank you, Sharifa. We haven't actually talked. I haven't talked about a lot of the things I thought I might today, because who did I write my book for? I think I wrote it mostly for adoptees who come from the closed system, as I did, where our birth records, birth certificates and adoption records were sealed, where there was practically no information about where we came from, where searching is the personal quest that's there to take or not to take. So listeners who are in that position, wondering whether they should search, I just say to you, first of all, it was a total life changer for me. It was the best thing I ever did for myself. And people who also have bad experiences also say that it's better to know the truth than to go on wondering, you know, where you came from. Why did my mother reject me, give me away? All those questions that undermine you for your whole life. There are people out there, organizations out there who can help you search. And there are organizations that are trying really hard to change the laws so that adoption records will be open. The American Adoption Council is a big one. And Bastard Nation is another big one. But there are hundreds of support groups for search and reunion in different cities all over the states. Email me if you want to, just somebody to compare ideas with, or you've read my book and you want to talk about things. And I've set up just an email dedicated to this, and it's She Turned Her Head Away at gmail.com. Fantastic. By the way, Mm-hmm. Can I just mention the reason I called the book She Turned Her Head Away? Because that's that's what my mother did when I was born, because she couldn't stand to look at me because she was giving me away. So that's what that means.
She turned her head away. She turned away. I think I understand completely. My first book was called And Here's Your Box. It was about my different layoffs. And the last thing that they always say to you when you're laid off is, and here's your box. It's your box of all your personal belongings. So I can definitely understand that train of thought. Thank you, Patricia. Carrie, what do you have for us?
Yeah, I have a resource I haven't talked about available, and it is an online course that my company created called How to Make a Brand Story Video That Isn't Boring. And I think it will resonate with your listeners in the way that you do things, Sharifa, because it really is about why do you do what you do and not just listing your services, but how do you really draw out and get to who you are and representing your company that way. So that's available right now for pre-order. It's launching on February 15th, and people can get to that by going to concurrentproductions.com/learn.
I love it. Thank you. Rose Marie.
Yes. Well, my mission, I wanted to everyone to understand how they can remove the communication barrier so they can communicate more effectively and receive information more effectively so that they can reach their personal and professional goals. I want people to understand that if you want to be the leader of your dog pack, if you want to be the leader of people, you must first be aware of your own body language and how you project and how people are perceiving you. Because first impressions begin when you are seen, not when you start talking. So by the time you open your mouth, people already have an idea of what they think you are, who they think you are. So good.
Yes, I like
my book, Lead the Human Pack, Think Like a Dog Trainer.
Lead the Human Pack, Think Like a Dog Trainer. I think that's wonderful. Thank you, Rosemarie. Phoenix, what do you have for us?
So I think my big takeaway is just to keep an open mind and be open to things that you might not be experienced with, or maybe it's scary. And I think people, when they're willing to learn about what it is, it allows them to make an informed choice, an informed decision. I think that is really the big takeaway between psychic readings in general, is it's a tool to help you make decisions that are empowering for yourself. And that is really all I have to say. And Mystic Sense has a lot of great psychics that can offer their services so that people can make informed choices about their life and their situations.
Yes, thank you, Phoenix. Lise, what do you have for us?
I guess my takeaway is, you know, if you're stressed and suffering, just know that there's something inside of you that needs to be resolved. You know, there's always going to be bumps on the road. Life is going to continue happening. Some things will be bigger than others, personally, collectively, or whatever. But when you're clean and clear in here, it makes all the difference for you. And I loved what I think it's Carrie, what you said in the beginning around, you know, just save your own butt first, you know. And I think there's so many people out there trying to save the world. Start with yourself. And, you know, I have a lot of resources. I have books, I have online courses. I take people through, you know, hypnosis, and I bring them right down into the basement, right down to the core. And, you know, if you're looking to do that work, you know, if you're suffering enough and you want change, because often people, you know, they'll stay in the comfort zone. They'll stay in that safe space, even if they don't like it, until that suffering gets to a point where they're ready and willing to make those changes. And, you know, if you want to find some of those resources, I'm at liseleblanc.ca.
Yes, thank you. I want to thank you all for being guests on this morning's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching this show in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the live show does not mean you're not important. You are very important to us. We still need your help. We still need your support. We still need you to go ahead and share this show. Whether you watched it 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 years from now, you can still go ahead and share this information. But as always, please don't just watch the show. Please don't just share the show. Please support our guests. Our guests came here to support you, to advise you, to share their stories and their journeys. So support them. Pick up a copy of their book. Have a session with them. Who knows? You might need a reading to do, to make some decision in your life. So support our guests. Their website links are in the Facebook post. Follow them on social media. Send them an email. Reach out to them. And when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.